Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Dave Ulrich is co-founder of the RBL Group and a professor of business at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business. He's ranked number one as a management educator guru by Business Week and was selected by Fast Company as one of the 10 most innovative and creative leaders. He has also been named HR Magazine's most influential person in the HR field 4 out of the last 5 years and was most recently listed number 31 on the Thinkers 50 Global Ranking of Business Gurus. He's written 20 books covering topics in HR and leadership, including The Leadership Code and HR Transformation. Dave, welcome to Edgewise.
Thanks so much, Dave.
To begin with, we're in the middle of tough economic times. What is the first step a company should take to define its human capital strategy for the future?
In tough times, leaders need to recognize that the way out is not to jump to solutions, but it's to be very thoughtful about what we do at two ends. And the human capital is managing the people as well as the organization. In these tough times, what the leaders have to do is help make sure we have the right talent in the right places, in the right jobs, with the right skills, and we have the right organization who can leverage that talent to create value. Also, in tough times, if I can go one step further, it's an incredible difficulty, and we all know that, but it's also an opportunity. Tough times is a license to do things we may not have been able to do before. So leaders need to make the very difficult decisions around talent and organization so they can position themselves for the future.
I have a question related to the subtitle of the book. It's called HR Transformation, but the subtitle is Building Human Resources from the Outside In. Can you explain what you mean by that?
The outside says you begin your internal human resource practices by having a very good sense of what the customers expect in the marketplace. Often in human resources, what we say is we want to be the employer of choice. We want to hire great people. We want to build on our strengths. We want great talent. What the outside in view says is don't end there and don't start there. We want to be the employer of choice of employees our customers would choose. We want to build on our strengths that will strengthen others. When our human resource systems inside of a company reflect the external customer expectations, that's where the value will ultimately be created.
Now, in the book, you discuss why transforming human resources requires a redesigning of the department, a re-engineering of practices, and an upgrade in personnel. So what does a successful HR transformation look like in a nutshell?
In a nutshell, it does all of those things. Sometimes we say, what is it about HR we have to do? There's a topology of three, and they're simple. Change the HR department. That's make sure we have the right structure in HR with a mission, a vision, an organization structure, delivery mechanism. Two, change the HR practices. Talent practices around people, performance management around rewards, communication, organization design. And three, upgrade the HR people. So when we think of HR, we think of the department, the practices, and the people. Changing all three of those is what transformation requires.
Dave, what are the challenges to transforming HR? What are the common pitfalls that companies encounter?
The first one is we try to do something in one of those areas, but not the other. For example, we say, let's outsource our administrative systems. Let's outsource our payroll or outsource our benefits processing. And we say, as soon as we've done that, we've transformed HR. Well, that's not true. Because when you change any one piece, you've got to change the others. So one of the pitfalls is trying to do simple fixes to complex issues.
Right.
A second pitfall is we look at the short term, not the long term. In this tough economy, some firms have laid off across the board. Let's take out 15%. Let's take off 20% in every department. They have not been strategic about those decisions. And as a result, they've hurt some of their human capital. So being short term, not long term, being simple, not complex, gets in the way of a good transformation.
So how does a chief human resource officer or a chief executive officer or anybody who's on the very high end of these human resource decisions justify the investment in that type of transformation at a time when companies are just cutting costs wholesale?
Two steps, Dave. The first one is, what's the business context in which that occurs? If we do HR transformation, what's going to happen in the business? We'll be more able to change. We'll be more responsive to customers. We'll create intangible value with investors. The second step is, what's the outcome in measurable terms? If we do this transformation, what's going to happen to the business? Will we be faster to market with new products? And what's the revenue gain that's going to come? Will we increase intangible shareholder value? And what's the market value that's going to come? When we can begin to link HR to those outcomes, then the transformation is a value creator, not a value detractor.
All right. Dave, most CEOs just do not have an extensive human resource background. With this in mind, what role can a CEO play in transforming HR?
One of the things you want from a CEO is the CEO sponsors and then is clever enough to bring in experts who can make it happen. And the same is true in finance and technology and other functional areas.
Okay.
So a CEO says, what I need in my company in this economy is to have better global leverage. I need lower cost. I need more innovation. HR then says, if we transform the department, the practices, and the people, you will get your global leverage, you'll get your economy of scale, your efficiency, your cost savings, and you'll get your innovation. What the CEO has to maintain is not to get into the details of the transformation, but to say, what's the outcome we're going to get? And then turn to the head of HR and the other advisors and say, how will you use HR to transform so that we can begin to get those outcomes in a regular and disciplined way?
As you look toward the future, especially now when we're at a pivotal moment in history, what do you think the new responsibilities will be for HR professionals?
There's a great saying in French, plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose. The more things change, the more they're the same. Some is going to be the same. HR professionals will have to continue to create value, doing things that others will get value of. So what's going to change? We think the value premise is focused from inside to outside. It's not just making sure that the employees are competent and committed. It's making sure they're committed so the customers get products and services they want, so that investors have confidence in future earnings, so that communities have a sense of reputation of the brand we've got. So the value is focused on the outside. We think we'll see HR in the future continuing to create value by looking outside. Now, what set of skills does that then lead to? HR people have to be credible, they have to be trusted, but they have to be activists, they have to have a point of view. HR people have to be business literate in order to talk about the human resource practices in business terms. HR people have to be what we call strategic architects, who can literally design internal strategy, direction, agendas that connect with outside customers. HR people have to build incredibly efficient and operationally good systems in HR. They have to manage change and make things happen. We have raised the bar on HR. What it takes to run HR today is very different than 25 years ago, because the HR work is not just managing internal issues for the employee, for the organization, but external issues for the customer, for the investor, for the community. And when we have that lens, we hope the HR people can begin to respond and create value they've had to create for many years.
Okay. What are the potential consequences if, for instance, corporate America fails to see the need to transform HR into being a more strategic business partner?
There's a short-term and a long-term consequence. In the short term, you can squeeze a lemon and get juice until the juice is all gone. You can squeeze employees and force them to become more productive, be more demanding and more demanding, but eventually the juice wears out and the employees are unable to produce. We think there's a sense of reinvestment in the ultimate human capital. What most good CEOs know is at the end of the day, our knowledge and our talent that walks out the door is the real asset we've got. And when you build human resource practices that make that happen, it succeeds. One of the fascinating insights we've had is human resources being more strategic and a partner and all these fancy words is not because the human resource profession needs it. It's not that the human resource profession wants it. It's that the business leaders demand it. In study after study of CEO, the top issue is how do we execute our strategy? How do we build future leaders? How do we make change happen? How do we manage talent for future growth? Those are the issues the HR transformation should address. So it isn't HR saying, see me, see me, see me with a narcissistic sign. It's business leaders saying, I'm struggling here with some tough issues.
Right.
I turn to my finance people on how to refinance my business. I turn to my marketing people on how to connect with customers. I turn to my HR people for strategy execution, leadership development, managing talent, engaging employees. It's that kind of issue that we think we see more of.
What kind of intangible benefits can companies realize from investing in human resources?
There's a simple way and a complex way to answer it. The simple way is an intangible benefit is simply anything that you feel or has value that you cannot drop on your foot, an affection for a spouse or a partner, love of a child. In business setting, The intangible value shows up in stock price in publicly traded firms. Two firms in the same industry both earn 100 in cash flow. The market may value them up to 50 to 60% differently. One firm seems to have an intangible value that we have confidence in their future earnings. The other firm, we have less confidence. Behind that confidence, we've done an awful lot of research, and others have done research that we've synthesized. It has to do with, do we have a clear, consistent pattern of earnings? Do we have a clear strategy? Do we have the right technical skills to deliver? Do we have the right organization and leadership for the future? It's that confidence in the intangible future earnings that investors pay attention to. And that's where we think human resource professionals can have a huge impact.
Sure.
The new ROI of HR is not return on investment, it's return on intangibles.
Mm-hmm.
Because the HR people should be building that intangible value in the investment community.
Right. Dave, the book includes case studies related to the HR stories of four companies, Flextronics, Pfizer, Intel, and Takeda. They've apparently all benefited from drastically rethinking HR. Can you talk a little bit about those?
You bet. Each of those companies in very different markets, a pharmaceutical market with Takeda and Pfizer, a background, Flextronics makes products you don't see but you use, and Intel, the backbone in the semiconductor industry, and moving to communications. In each of those cases, the business leader said, we've got to be stronger. At Intel, we've got to manage our costs. We've got to be innovative. In Flextronics, we've got to manage global distribution and costs. At Pfizer, we've got to begin to make mergers happen as we buy other companies. We've got to build a pipeline of new products.
Yeah, exactly.
The HR department and the leaders in HR said, our job in HR is not just to do the administrative services. We have to do that. It's got to be done. Payroll, benefits, all those important things. But what we want to do is help you at Pfizer and Takeda become more innovative, to get a better pipeline of drugs. What we want to do at Intel is help you begin to shift from a technology company to a communications and services company. At Flextronics, we want to help you manage costs by getting global sourcing. And then the HR people said, what are we going to do with talent? What are we going to do with organization? What are we going to do with people? What are we going to do with compensation in order to help make that happen? So the HR people became the carriers of the strategic story and the ones who helped implement it.
I recall a book I read way back in college. It was William Uche's Theory Z. In it, he makes a case for all senior level executives or people who are high potentials passing through the HR function, doing a tour of duty in HR. What are your thoughts on something like that?
Oh, man, you just brought back memories. Bill Uche was one of my PhD advisors. What a delightful and marvelous, thoughtful man.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure you have to pass through HR in order to get HR. I'm not sure I have to go run a finance company to understand finance. But I think the premise is true, that any leader who succeeds has got to have a sense of both people and organization. How you get that may vary.
Right.
Some people, by the way, just have instincts mm-hmm. around sensitivity and people and organization. Some people have those instincts. Others can obviously learn them. And then there's probably some that will never get them. So leaders are all over the map. Some have instincts, let them go. Some will never get it. Don't put them in positions where they have to do it. And some with training and coaching will eventually get very good at it.
And just to wrap this up, what about taking it to the highest possible level and saying, what role can a corporate board play in transforming HR?
I think we'll see a major shift. We've just finished a study that came out in Fortune magazine called Top Companies for Leaders, and they published it every 2 years. One of the insights out of that study is at the companies that do the best job in leadership, which we'll use as a surrogate for HR for a minute, their boards of directors spend 20 to 30% of their time on leadership, talent, human resource issues. What we've seen in boards of directors is you'll often go into a board meeting and the first piece is financial return, which makes sense. How are we doing economically? The second piece is strategic assessment. How are we positioning ourselves for the future? And then a board often gets into key decisions, capital structure, global strategy, marketing, customer. I think now we're going to see three parts.
Right.
Finance has to be there. If we don't make money, we don't survive. Strategy has to be there. If we can't position ourselves for growth, we don't deserve to survive. And the third is organization and people. The good boards are having very rigorous discussions, not once a year when we look at talent reviews, but every board meeting where we can talk about the talent and people we have to make it happen. It's becoming a part of good board discussion.
We've been speaking to Dave Ulrich, one of the authors of a new book, HR Transformation, Building Human Resources from the Outside In. Dave, thanks for being with us today.
Great to be with you. Thanks so much, Dave.
With only an internet connection and a browser, you can tap into AMA's world-class training. The American Management Association is bringing live instructor-led training right to your desktop. AMA's new virtual seminar offering features a live virtual format that is highly interactive and very user-friendly. It's taught by the same expert, world-class faculty that run our classroom sessions, and the high-quality content has been specially engineered to run in an online format. You get real-time online interaction with your course leader and your fellow attendees. You will receive a USB headset so that you can not only listen but talk to your classmates and your instructor. So take advantage of these offerings, enhance your career journey by building your skills, and you don't have to take any time away from the office. For more information about AMA's virtual seminar offering, visit our website at www.amanet.org. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.